I'm Jade.
And I'm Shauna.
And this is Wellness Speaks,
a podcast about functional medicine and healthy living.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 5, Wellness Speaks, about Epstein-Barr virus and its link to autoimmunity. So in this episode, we are going to discuss how viruses like Epstein-Barr can trigger and be problematic in autoimmune conditions, as well as what you can do about it. And per usual, this podcast is meant to be purely informational and a jumping off point for any of you listeners to kind of start delving into your own research. So nothing that we say in this podcast is meant to diagnose, treat, or mitigate any sort of disease.
So we're going to jump right in. And this is a very hot topic in the medical community. So autoimmune disease has been on my radar after I read that 85% of moms of children on the autism spectrum develop an autoimmune condition of some sort. And that's a really high statistic. So
that's super high.
It is. A lot of this, of course, has to do with genetics, specifically MTHFR and a few other genetic mutations or SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, that can affect like the vitamin D in the body, response to fats, and omega-3 conversion. We will definitely take a closer look at MTHFR another day, because there's lots of information on that that we would love to share. But as we have mentioned before, genetics is just part of the issue. And environment and lifestyle can very much make or break your body's response to these genetic factors, and even to viral loads you are carrying, such as with the Epstein-Barr virus. So after hearing these statistics, and during my second pregnancy, and after giving birth as well, in my first few months after giving birth, I began developing a myriad of symptoms that were all very closely related to autoimmune type symptoms. So I had lost 10 pounds in the first trimester of my pregnancy before even knowing I was pregnant.
Wow.
I'd had extreme fatigue to where I could not even walk across my house without feeling extremely exhausted.
So way more than just like, oh, I'm tired because I'm pregnant.
Yes. Yeah, it was way more than that. It was full exhaustion where I was completely out of breath and could not go anymore.
Wow.
I also had extreme pain in the skin of my extremities, especially in my arms. And so when I touched my arms, it just felt like it was on fire. Additionally, I had extreme heart palpitations and anxiety, and was short of breath all the time. So I developed carpal tunnel and
wow.
Nerve pain in my lower extremities as well. It was a very difficult few months. And so this is when I really started changing my diet and looking more closely into the dietary factors for this. And just to throw this in there as well, I have the Epstein-Barr virus also dormant.
So, yeah. So I also have had Epstein-Barr virus, but I have no idea when I had it. I had blood drawn, and kind of unbeknownst to me, they ran just a titer test, I guess, to kind of see if maybe that was what was going on. And they told me that they were like, so when did you have mono? And I have no idea when I had mono. Not a clue. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, you've got titers for it. So you had it at one point. But I think this is pretty common, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people have Epstein-Barr and don't even realize that they've had it. So let's start by kind of giving a brief overview of what autoimmune disease is. So an autoimmune disease basically is a condition in which your immune system mistakenly attacks your body.
Yes. And the latest statistic shows that autoimmune is affecting 1 in 6 Americans. That's huge. That's a really high number.
That's an extremely high number. That's 50 million Americans.
Yeah. The immune system normally guards against germs like bacteria and viruses. And when it senses these foreign invaders, it sends out an army of fighter cells to attack them.
Right. And typically, in a healthy person, the immune system can tell the difference between foreign cells that it needs to attack and your own cells. But in an autoimmune disease, your immune system sort of gets confused. It mistakes a part of your body, like your joints or your skin, as these foreign invaders. And it releases proteins that we call autoantibodies that attack your healthy cells.
Yeah, so some of the autoimmune diseases target only one organ, such as type 1 diabetes damages the pancreas by destroying beta cells, which produce the insulin. But other diseases like lupus affect multiple body systems. There are many triggers of autoimmune conditions, some of these being diet and specific toxins in the environment, leaky gut, which we talked about in episode 2 and 3, stress, infections, and viruses. So today we're just going to focus on the research with Epstein-Barr virus specifically. But the viruses like Epstein-Barr do not leave your system. When your immune system is healthy, it keeps these viruses in check, though. And when it is suppressed by stress or illness, the infection can become active once again. So once this virus is active, the inflammatory immune response damages tissue, which then causes more inflammation and a bigger response from the immune system. And autoimmune disease develops from this chronic state of inflammation.
Right. And I guess kind of to just give a little more background on Epstein-Barr or EBV, this is the virus that causes infectious mononucleosis, so typically called mono. But EBV causes this persistent infection. It's within your body's memory B cells. So this allows the virus more or less to kind of evade your immune system. And this is why it never leaves your body, because you're with these evasion techniques that it has, your body can't ever find it and eradicate it the way that it does the flu. But 95% of all U.S. adults have contracted this virus by age 40. So like I was saying earlier, a lot of us have likely had mono at some point, even if we didn't realize it. And it's often misdiagnosed as the flu or as strep throat. But so something that I think is pretty interesting, a lot of people probably don't even realize, is that Epstein-Barr is actually a member of the herpes virus. It is human herpes virus 4. So some other human herpes viruses that were all or is it viruses? 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 I don't know. Some others that we're all familiar with are like cytomegalovirus, chickenpox, oral and genital herpes, HHV6 and HHV7. So there's 8 human herpes viruses total. So most of these are like super common viruses that a lot of people end up dealing with for our entire lifespan. And those other common ones like oral herpes is, you know, like a, not a canker sore, but like a, what's it called?
Mouth sore?
Yeah, what's it called though? It's not a mouth sore. I can't remember. There's like a specific name for it. Anyway, probably not fun times to have. But so these most people know will flare up again, like you were saying, Shauna, when the body is stressed or when the immune system is dealing with some other sort of illness. And Epstein-Barr virus is transferred via saliva. So this is why a lot of people call it the kissing disease. And this is also why so many people are exposed to it in high school and college when everybody's kissing each other.
So EBV is the infection that has been studied the most extensively in connection with autoimmune disease. And it has been strongly correlated with multiple sclerosis, chronic fatigue syndrome, lupus, fibromyalgia, Graves' disease. And 70% of healthy children test positive for EBV in children with lupus. The rate of EBV infection is actually closer to 99%. And this is pretty staggering. 100% of people with MS test positive for EBV.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's everyone. Everyone with MS has Epstein-Barr.
So whether or not you have an autoimmune disease, it's very likely you'll test positive for one or both of these infections. But what's more is that if you have an autoimmune disease, you will have a higher viral load or a higher level of the virus in your body, making it more likely that the infection will be re-triggered.
Yeah, so SLE or systemic lupus erythematosus, so lupus for short, these patients have been found to have active EBV replication in their serum of around 42%. So this is compared to, in this particular study, compared to only 3% replication in the healthy controls. So the people that did not have lupus but also had EBV, the healthy patients only had 3% replication, whereas the lupus patients had 42%. So huge difference there.
Yeah.
The increase in the viral load was actually associated with lupus disease activity, so like flares. So this kind of indicates that the initial development or trigger of lupus and also the flares in people already diagnosed with lupus are associated with the reactivation of latent Epstein-Barr. So then also there was a study on patients with rheumatoid arthritis, and they were found to have a tenfold higher active replication viral load than healthy patients, specifically in the B memory cells of their synovial fluid. So not necessarily the B memory cells of other parts of their body, but particularly the synovial fluid. So this is the fluid within your joints. This is where the majority of cytotoxic T cells become inflamed in rheumatoid arthritis, and this is what causes the typical joint pain and inflammation that's associated with rheumatoid arthritis. So I thought that was really interesting that it was an active replication load specifically in the synovial fluid.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's just kind of one more of those things with autoimmune disease where, like, you know, why would it replicate in the synovial fluid of one patient and in, you know, somewhere else for somebody else, like in the active EBV proteins that were found in the saliva of Sjorgen's patients? The association here is that a reactivated Epstein-Barr infection could be responsible for the salivary gland damage that is associated with this disease. So, like, why would it be in their salivary gland, and then in another person it would be replicating in their synovial fluid? So one more of the many mysteries of autoimmune disease, but also super, super interesting. So there's common gene variants that are known to be involved in the pathogenesis of all three of these diseases mentioned in Sjorgen's and RA and lupus. So all three of these diseases include these specific components, and Epstein-Barr has also been shown to work within these specific cytokine pathways that are involved in all three of these diseases. So clearly, like, more research is needed to find out exactly how this reactivation of Epstein-Barr directly influences the activation of flares and the initial trigger of autoimmune disease, but these commonalities and this overlap certainly indicate that there is a link between all of them. So Epstein-Barr and the HHV6 and HHV7 have also been linked to autoimmune diseases like chronic fatigue, Hashimoto's, Guillain-Barr, even Alzheimer's and IBD. So, like, inflammatory bowel disease like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's. So Epstein-Barr was also the very first human virus, and there's been others since then, but it was the first virus found to be linked directly to cancer.
Yeah. So with 1 in 6 Americans dealing with an autoimmune condition, we have to wonder why is this being triggered so commonly, and especially when almost 100% are carrying the virus of the Epstein-Barr virus that do have the autoimmune conditions. So many of us are dealing with chronic stress, which can wreak complete havoc on the body. This can be like constant sleep deprivation, poor diet, long work hours, problems in our relationships. The list goes on and on.
So, like, but when you have daily life.
Typically daily life, exactly. So, yeah, when you have these constant stressors in your life, your immune system never really gets to turn off. And your inflammatory immune response is activated for too long, and it eventually goes rogue, attacking your own bodily tissues. And soon your stress hormones try to suppress the response but go overboard, leaving you with a weakened immune system. And then simultaneously, your body is inflamed and you are vulnerable to infections, including latent infections like the Epstein-Barr virus and the herpes simplex viruses that never left your body in the first place. So each time these viruses are activated, when you have symptoms of mono or an outbreak of the herpes simplex virus, they replicate and damage more of your cells. So then with each reactivation of the Epstein-Barr virus, the amount of immune evasion by the virus actually expands, meaning that each time it reactivates, it actually learns how to better evade your immune systems by suppressing it.
So it's a super smart virus.
Yeah.
It's just like a little alien virus replicating in your body, learning how to evade your immune system.
Exactly.
So this really begins this vicious cycle, right? Where the infection, it becomes active, it destroys tissue, it provokes an even greater immune response. And then your body releases cortisol to try to calm this immune response down. This triggers more infection, so on and so forth. So it becomes a bit of sort of like the chicken or the egg when it comes to Epstein-Barr reactivation and other issues within the body. So things like you were saying, a stressful time in your life, that, you know, daily life, leaky gut syndrome, which is super common, candida overgrowth, super common, adrenal fatigue, super common, Lyme disease, also super common.
Yes. And another one that's really growing.
Yeah. And mold, toxic mold exposure is almost always linked with Lyme disease as well. So I would be also sort of interested to know if there's some sort of a link between like Epstein-Barr reactivation upon exposure to toxic mold. I didn't come across anything saying that, but I also wasn't necessarily searching for it. Yeah, so that would be kind of interesting to find. So these things can all lead to a reactivation of Epstein-Barr. So like we were saying earlier, has the potential to then trigger an autoimmune disease. Early and recent studies have also demonstrated that Epstein-Barr prevalence among MS patients, like we were saying earlier, is virtually 100%. So in the general population, it's closer to 85 to 95%. But there are also studies showing that just a single flare of shingles. So if you have chickenpox when you're a kid, you can potentially have a shingles outbreak as an adult. Typically, this happens when you either contract another virus or when you're in a very stressful time in your life. But a single flare of shingles puts a person at 4 times the risk of developing MS. So,
wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about relating to like the chickenpox vaccine that people are getting, and then instead of having chickenpox, they're breaking out with shingles earlier and earlier. So you've got to kind of wonder what that means for the risk of developing MS earlier on. But clearly this group of herpes viruses are an extremely strong driving external factor in whether a person may or may not develop an autoimmune condition.
And I know about 5 people in the last 2 months that have been diagnosed with shingles, and
really? They
were miserable. Yes.
Yeah. So. My mom had a case of it, and it was when it was like a super stressful time of her life. And she, she said it was incredibly painful. Super, super painful. Yeah. I hope I never have to deal with that. But that kind of brings us to what to do about it.
Exactly. Right. So since the viruses cannot leave the body or be actually killed in the body, first and foremost, what we need to do is heal the gut. And as we said, that was episode 2 and 3. We talked about leaky gut and what you can do to restore all the digestive function and leaky gut issues. So take a listen to that if you haven't already. So healing the gut will automatically lead to less stress on the body and reducing overall inflammation.
Yeah, and a huge part of this is reduction or elimination of sugar and refined carbohydrates, which we definitely talked about in our leaky gut episodes. These two things stress your immune system, and they create these massive amounts of inflammation sort of by two different pathways. So when blood sugar is high, with like when you're constantly eating sugar, refined carbohydrates. So blood sugar is high and the body produces more free radicals. So this promotes an inflammatory response. So you can see how constantly spiking your blood sugar over and over would lead to this like constant low-grade inflammation. And then when blood sugar spikes, it triggers this really high insulin release, which in turn leads to this sharp drop in glucose or hypoglycemia. And then this leads to a very sharp cortisol release. And that cortisol release leads to the ensuing low-grade inflammation. So sugar really comes at your body by two different inflammatory routes there. It's like a double whammy for you. Boom, boom.
And another absolutely necessary part of keeping viral loads down is relieving the stress. And this is important in healing the body overall. So I know. How do you do this? Because it's it seems impossible. And, you know, it's going to be different for every person. But some quick ideas are take 10 minutes a day to journal, meditate, pray, whatever your connection is. Take a walk in nature and get a massage, do some yoga, listen to music. All of those have been shown, even in research, to reduce stress levels quite dramatically.
Yeah, and I don't think that enough emphasis is put on how important it is to de-stress. Like, we live in this society where being super busy and doing all the things and drinking all the coffee and running on 2 hours of sleep is really sort of glorified. And I think, I mean, you know, you see memes all over social media talking about, you know, but first coffee. And while I agree with that on one hand, on the other hand, we really need to change our perspective on this, because it's not a good thing to be, you know, running on 2 hours of sleep and drinking all the coffee so that you can do all the things. But like, walk barefoot on the grass. I just saw this video that I sent to you, Shauna, that one that I sent you the other day, with like these actual scientific studies on grounding or earthing.
This yes, is, I loved that video.
Yes, it was so cool. So this is literally walking barefoot and like literally being physically connected to the earth. Because if you think about it, when you're walking with shoes, you're there's a barrier between you and the earth. But it was scientific studies about how it lowers your levels of inflammation. And it really changed my perspective on the science of grounding. Because while I have also always been like, yes, it's nice to walk in nature and touch the earth, I kind of thought it was a little woo. But not that I ever thought it was like, oh, you shouldn't do that, because
right,
obviously it feels good to do that. But when I watched this quick 15-minute video, it really changed my perspective on the science of it. So much so that it made me want to do an episode on it at a later date after I read a book about
it. Yeah, for sure. I want to do that too.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But so lowering your viral load, aside from healing the gut and relieving stress, some additional ways that you can lower the viral load inside the body is to focus on foods and supplements that have been shown to do this by either reducing inflammation or playing an antioxidant role in the body. So this is going to help to reduce the risk of activation or reactivation of a virus like Epstein-Barr.
Yeah, so like cilantro and dandelion greens, parsley and other leafy greens, these all contain massive amounts of antioxidants and phytonutrients that help reduce that inflammation and oxidative stress in the body. They are also excellent in detoxing and ridding the body of heavy metals, which are problematic in autoimmune conditions as well. Mm-hmm. So taking a high quality zinc supplement can be highly beneficial. A high-quality vitamin C. L-lysine is another great supplement that lowers the body's viral load. And it does this by reducing the amount of arginine in the body. And basically, arginine is a food supply for Epstein-Barr viruses and other viruses as well. So coconut oil, specifically the lauric acid in the coconut oil, is super microbial and helps fight that. The viral load. Humic acid is another one, which is a mineral-rich compound created from seaweed. And this removes toxins from the gut before they even enter the cells, allowing the immune system to function at its peak performance. It also reduces inflammation. And just to throw out a couple of other supplements that may be beneficial for you include oregano oil, olive leaf, cat's claw, eye bright, and lemon balm. And a variety of different herbal teas like thyme and nettle leaf can also be incredibly healing for the body.
For sure. And elderberry is a really superb antiviral herb. The flip side of elderberry is that it doesn't just like boost your immune system, but it really revs your immune system, which if you already have a diagnosed autoimmune disease is not something you really want to do. Echinacea is another antiviral herb that works great, but is also more of a booster. And so I really prefer to recommend the use of immune builders rather than boosters with most of my autoimmune clients. So things like astragalus, calendula, garlic, ginger. You mentioned cat's claw. I think that's a great one. And vitamin D, I think, is huge. Like the more we learn about vitamin D and all of these varying roles that it sort of plays in our body, the more sense it makes that as we have as a society have started spending all of this time indoors and a lot less time in the sun, the more we've started developing these issues with our immune systems being faulty. And all of these issues that we're talking about are rooted in inflammation, and vitamin D is a huge part of keeping that inflammation down. So when you think about the fact that 36% of healthy adolescents and 57% of adults are insufficient in vitamin D, we clearly have a problem here. So the role vitamin D plays in autoimmunity is that it promotes your regulatory T cells. So these are cells, we alluded to these earlier, these are the cells that are able to differentiate between the foreign invaders, like the viruses and the bacteria, and your body's own cells. So when your levels of vitamin D are sufficient and you're able to promote these regulatory T cells, vitamin D is basically making your immune system smarter because it's allowing them to better differentiate between foreign invaders and the body's own tissue cells. And multiple studies have linked vitamin D deficiency and insufficiency, so there's a difference there, with autoimmune diseases like lupus and MS, like type 1 diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis. So a super prevalent immune booster or builder, rather.
Yes, and I would just like to add that with vitamin D, it's really important to work with a practitioner and have your vitamin D levels checked. Research shows that when fighting an autoimmune condition specifically, your vitamin D levels should typically be in the range of like 50 to 70 nanograms per milliliter.
Yeah.
I just would like to stress that you really should know your levels so that you can get them in the right range for your condition.
Yeah. And if you're taking vitamin D of like 5,000 IUs or higher, it's really important that you're taking a K2 supplement along with it so that when you absorb the calcium, it's deposited in your bone tissue where it's supposed to and not in your arteries. We don't want to calcify anybody's arteries, right?
Yes. Good information. All right, so now on to omega-3 fatty acids, the EPA and the DHA. These are also super important contributors to modulating inflammation. So arthritis, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis and lupus are all autoimmune diseases characterized by high levels of interleukin-1 and pro-inflammatory leukotrienes, which are produced by omega-6 fatty acids. These are the pro-inflammatory fatty acids that completely run rampant in a standard American diet. There have been a number of clinical trials assessing the benefits of dietary supplementation with fish oils in several inflammatory and autoimmune diseases in humans, including rheumatoid arthritis and Crohn's disease, psoriasis, and lupus, and also multiple sclerosis and even migraine headaches. So Many of the placebo-controlled trials of fish oil in chronic inflammatory diseases reveal significant benefit, including decreased disease activity and a lowered use of anti-inflammatory drugs, even.
Yeah, which is super rad. Like, you don't have to use as many prescription drugs. That's nice. Yep. Just by taking omega-3s. Eating a fatty fish like sustainably wild-caught tuna or cold water Atlantic salmon a few times a week will supply enough omega-3s for you. But if you're not a fish person, you can always take a quality omega-3 supplement, or you can add cod liver oil, which I know sounds really gross, but it comes in like lemon and orange flavors. It's not that bad. You can add them to a smoothie or a juice to meet your requirements. I do like to point out that it's important for vegans and vegetarians to note that while ALA does convert in the body to EPA and DHA, most people don't convert it very well. And so you can't take the same amount of ALA that you would take of like EPA and DHA and expect it to be equivalent. It's a little more difficult for vegans and vegetarians to get enough quality omega-3s when you're not consuming fish. So just something to think about there. And we talked a little bit at the beginning about genetics, and I think we speak a lot about genetics and how they really only account for somewhere between 10 and 15% of sort of your fate as far as determining how your body reacts to all of these daily encounters that we have with the world at large, all of these exposures to external toxins, which include our exposure to viruses. So one thing to take into consideration is your MTHFR status. I kind of want to just loop back to that. And while this requires a lot more explanation than we really have time for today, an MTHFR status has an impact on your methylation status. This in turn impacts the body's ability to produce glutathione. Glutathione is the body's most important antioxidant. And this impacts how well we're able to handle the requirements that are put on our body during a viral infection or a viral reactivation. So while you cannot change your genetic code, just being aware of your genetic code and how this affects the way your body might process things differently can help you to make adjustments in your daily life that are going to lead to a lesser probability of developing an autoimmune disease. So disorders like autism, ADHD, MS, fibromyalgia, heart disease, even addiction, like the likelihood of developing an addiction, miscarriages, these have all been linked to MTHFR mutations. So this is certainly not to say that an MTHFR mutation is some sort of a death sentence or something that will be the one determinant that decides whether or not you develop an autoimmune disease, but rather it's more of a key player that we just need to be aware of and address accordingly. So for those with an MTHFR mutation, I often recommend taking NAC, which is N-acetylcysteine, as a daily supplement. So NAC is actually a precursor to glutathione. It has been shown in several studies to actually lessen the viral load and the length of infection in flu patients compared to flu patients that were taking a placebo.
All right, so that pretty much sums up the link of Epstein-Barr virus and autoimmune conditions. We hope you got some useful information and tips. Thank you guys for listening, and we would love for you to follow us over on Instagram at Wellness Speaks Podcast. We would also be super appreciative if you would subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. Hope you have a wonderful week, and we will be back on Friday with our favorite quick, healthy, holiday-inspired recipes in our mini-sode.